From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. This episode is going to be all about what to do when money gets tight, because at some point, every entrepreneur, even the most responsible ones, will take some kind of major hit to the bank account. You just cannot avoid it. And then what? So let me start by telling you that if you want Saima Khan to cook you dinner, you should know that it is not going to be a cheap meal. Like, seriously, you have got to save up for this one.
They could fetch up to anything between, if I do it in dollars, between $3,000 to about $50,000.
I have never spent $50,000 on dinner.
Okay, so we have clientele. We cook for Middle Eastern kings who will fly me on a jet to go and cook like the best Wagyu beef in Japan in the middle of the Qatari desert. Ridiculous stuff like that. And the menu would be £5,000 a head.
I know, right? What did I tell you? So I have to be honest, when Saima first got in touch with me about her company, I thought, another luxury company. I rarely find luxury companies interesting. They're often just swimming in cash, and therefore they have no incentive to change or innovate. They just want to be seen as this pristine, beautiful thing. But that is not Saima's story.
I got to a point where I had literally about maybe $100 in my account.
Saima, who had grown a business that makes $50,000 dinners for Middle Eastern kings, nearly went broke. And it wasn't because she was irresponsible. It was because business is unpredictable and costs can sometimes come out of nowhere. And in this case, it was a change to the UK tax law that absolutely slammed her, and paying off that debt to the government left her with almost nothing.
It's probably the worst time I've gone through, to be honest, because I've had a, as soon as I've graduated, I've always had money in my account, always. And suddenly, I had this business that is working well, and I'm at a position where suddenly I'm going to be wiped out. And then I'm thinking, well, will I be able to even carry on the business? Number one. Number two, will I be able to even live in the house that I'm living in?
So what do you do in times like these? I mean, aside from just completely freak out, of course, how do you react to a major financial hit? How do you adjust your business so that it doesn't happen again? Saima's answer to those questions is important and illuminating and contains a lesson I think every entrepreneur can take away from, regardless of how much you're willing to spend on dinner. Because today, Saima's business is thriving like it never had before. So what did she do? We're going to dig into this big, tasty plate of knowledge right after this break. Do you ever wish you could just call up an expert in whatever your problem is and talk through a solution? We figured you might, which is why we at Entrepreneur just created Ask an Expert, an online mentorship platform. It is really awesome. All you do is scroll through our available mentors, pick someone you'd like to talk to, and then book them for a 30 or 60 minute video chat at a super reasonable cost. Our mentors are able to talk about growth strategies, branding strategies, leadership, literally whatever it is you need. And by the way, I'm one of the mentors. Yes, you can book a time with me. We can talk about how to get press for your business, personal branding, and so on. I've got to say, doing these sessions has become one of my favorite parts of the week. The people I'm meeting are so interesting, and it's been great to help them. Anyway, check out me and the other mentors at entrepreneur.com/mentorship. That's entrepreneur.com/mentorship to book a session today. All right, we're back. So first, you have to hear how Saima started this business, because it is one of the all-time great launches to a business I've ever heard. Saima is the daughter of immigrants who moved from Pakistan to London, but she eventually moved to New York for a job in banking. She had no experience as a professional chef, but happened to be a really good cook. And one day, as I guess happens in banking, I don't know, I'm not in banking, she bumped into Warren Buffett in a waiting room. Like, no big deal. What's up, Warren Buffett?
We started talking about food, and the next thing I know, I've invited him to my tiny flat in the Lower East Side. And then he turned up and he brought his friend Bill Gates along. And it's a very funny story, but I just made really lovely food.
Wait. Okay, we just need to stop the tape right there because I'm sure you're thinking what I was thinking, which is how exactly do you go from having a nice chat with Warren Buffett? I mean, assuming you have even put yourself in a position to have a nice chat with Warren Buffett, how do you go from that to the guy actually showing up at your home and bringing Bill Gates? So, of course, I asked her.
I think we just had a very honest conversation about life. I think he just couldn't understand how some of my personality was in risk. And we had a very personal conversation about love, loss, risk, home, food. And I was complaining about that there wasn't good South Asian food in New York. And that when I'm homesick, I make a mean curry and he loves food. And I just casually just forgot who he was and just having a lovely conversation, said, hey, you have to come over for dinner one day. And then 2 weeks later, his PA said that Warren Astrid would love to come over for dinner.
There's a really nice lesson here. Treat someone as if you have no agenda, as if you're just one person building a relationship with another person, and you'll get infinitely farther than if you're seeking some kind of transaction. Saima didn't have an angle here, and the Oracle of Omaha knew it. Though the dinner would turn out to be consequential. Her two guests, you know, Warren and Bill, were getting casual here. Anyway, those two guys then invited her to cook for a charity event that they were doing to raise money for people in Africa. And it would be a pretty formal affair. And Saima told them that they cannot treat it like a fancy dinner with plated lobster courses and whatever. The food and the experience has to match the moment. The people there at this event that she was talking about, they should feel like they're breaking bread together, she said. And this comes straight out of her own heritage, and with her Pakistani family having 30 and 40 people over at any random weekend to dig into huge amounts of food together. And Warren and Bill agreed to this. So Saima produced beautiful big plates of food at the charity for everyone to dig into together. After this, as you might imagine, she started getting other requests to cook for big events. And she did them, but she found that she far preferred cooking for people in more intimate settings rather than these big fundraising things. And after the endorsement of Warren and Bill, our old pals, these kind of opportunities were coming in too. And Saima connected with this work just so much more than banking. So in 2012, she decided to move back to London, which seemed like a more centralized place for this kind of work. And this way she could reach other European cities easily and still get back to America when need be. And so she called her new company Hampstead Kitchen after the neighborhood she lives in.
And then that's how I got the celebs and the royal clients and working for ambassadors. And we got a chance to cook at the White House.
Though interestingly, these super high profile, highly paid dinners really only made up about 10 to 15% of her business. The rest are what I'd call regular rich people who want a nice dining experience at home and are willing to pay good money for it. For these, she charges around $3,000 to $5,000 to feed 10 to 12 people.
People who were quite well traveled, they were always looking for new dining experiences.
This kind of work, however, is a little unpredictable week to week. Some weeks you have 5 events, others you have 30 events. So she structured her company accordingly. She has 20 full-time staff and a network of 128 freelancers who can serve as bartenders, waitstaff, and so on as they're needed. And from 2012 to 2017, this all works really, really well for Saima. Hampstead Kitchen is growing, she's making money, it was all excellent. But then her former banking career comes back to haunt her. And this gets complicated, so I'm just going to give you the simple version here. In 2017, the United Kingdom passed a law that targets people in the banking industry as a way to make up for the financial industry's role in creating the 2008 recession. The goal is to identify people who had structured their businesses and incomes in certain ways and then tax them retroactively. And Saima was caught up in all this and suddenly hit with a monster tax bill that she could either pay all at once or in monthly installments. And she didn't have the money to do either.
I didn't want to be able to pay it on a monthly basis, because if I did do that, it would mean that on a monthly basis, all my profits were gobbled up.
And here, even if you're not normally serving Warren and Bill dinner, you can relate. Many businesses, probably most businesses, are not financially prepared for a massive financial hit. It happens with rents in cities all the time, right? A business can be successful and then the rent goes up and suddenly they have to close the doors. They just aren't insulated enough. And Saima is feeling absolutely terrible about this. She worries that she's going to have to close her business, that the thing she was so proud of that employed all these people, because the money she earned just couldn't cover both her staff and her tax bill.
I was always expecting that I'd have a bad year, which never really happened. And then this was my, this was the, you know, the lowest I went in my whole, you know, 5 years of doing the business.
But Saima was not going to give up that easily. First, there was the immediate problem of where to get the money for the tax bill. She solved that by selling off an asset she had and borrowing money from a friend, which she felt bad and embarrassed about, but just had to do it. Next, however, is what's really important. She thought about the future. She's been serving these high-end dinners, which is great, but after 5 years, it hadn't produced enough money for her to pay off a big financial hit like the one she just took. So what happens if another one comes and she has nothing else to sell and no more friends to lend her money? Then what? The answer is that she needed to never, ever be in this position again, which means she decided that she needs to be creating additional revenue streams. And to do that, she started looking at her own business and her customers and asking herself a question. What problems do people have that I'm not solving, but that I could, that they would come to me to solve? And then she thought, well, wait, I'm already doing something like this. I'm just not treating it like a business.
I was getting called all the time like, oh, I want to start a food business or a deli or whatever. And I was helping people create a brand and a strategy and put together a business plan. So I thought, why don't I formalize it and charge people $500 or $1,000 to spend a day and do like a brand immersion thing where we completely flesh out their brand, who they're targeting, and how it should be visually sort of represented.
So she sets that up. And this also gets her thinking about a request she often gets from customers. Because as it turns out, Saima had prepared for a moment like this because she had been collecting data on her customer interactions for years.
I've got a database where I collect every single request, whether it's a phone call or an email, and I started seeing there was a trend. So there are people who can afford to pay for the private dining experiences, but they don't need it. Their friends are coming over, they want the food without, you know, wait staff.
So in other words, you know, these people could afford her full service and they've purchased her full service at points in the past, but you don't need that whole fancy thing every night. Not every night is fancy night. Sometimes you just need like a delivery.com for rich people. You just high-end delivery.com. Just drop off the food, nice food, and come back a few hours later to pick up all those serving dishes and stuff. And prior to her financial crisis, Saima would probably not have considered doing this. I mean, she knew people wanted it, and she didn't do it. Because it's a totally different value proposition. It's not what she imagined Hampstead Kitchen being. But now, well, she's thinking differently about this unmet need.
So how do we do this, which needed manpower, it needed a process, it needed someone to run the process so that I can be focusing on the, you know, the high-end sort of ticket numbers, as they say.
So she brings on a manager and starts experimenting, and a structure begins to form. They create a set menu every 3 months, along with detailed instructions, including photographs, so that a team of cooks can make the food without Saima having to be involved. Then it's just a matter of coordinating the drop-offs and delivery. And pretty soon, Saima had it rolling. I asked her if she was ever worried that this drop-off service would dilute her brand. Like, she had this high-end brand aimed at wealthy people and a very particular kind of service she offers. But now she's just dropping food off like any old service. And is that dangerous? But she says no. Actually, it's quite the opposite. As it turns out, the drop-off service has been great for repeat business. Because, you know, her wealthy clients, they do indeed have casual nights, and they're not going to want to go all out on these high-end experiences every time. Sometimes they just want to have friends over, and they want food delivered. And before, they were doing that elsewhere. Maybe they were calling high-end restaurants who were actually starting to deliver. But now they can go to her. She can serve her customers more often.
It still has an air of, like, someone's coming and setting it up. It's not coming in Tupperware boxes. It's somebody literally putting the food in beautiful ceramic dishes and setting it up.
After setting up these two new revenue streams, something amazing happened with her business. These two new ventures, in just a year, grew to become 45% of her business. 45%, which is to say everything that used to be her business is now 55% of her business. Just imagine how much of a transformation that is. Imagine if everything you did now, everything you relied upon for your revenue, became actually just about half of your total business. It's a game changer. And that's particularly true for Saima, who's in a very unique service business. Her old model, which was based upon big fancy meals for people, also meant that she had to be there for every big event.
I know it's me that's making the business because I can get someone else to do exactly the same thing, but people miss out on the conversation. That's what they want. They want to, you know, they want their guests to meet me and, you know, they feel good, they feel taken care of. But at the same time as well, the last 5 years, I've been working pretty much every weekend.
Now she doesn't have to work every weekend. She can actually reduce her volume of big events, giving herself more time to relax and to focus on developing other growing elements of her business. And in that way, Saima says, this whole financial mess turned out to be a pretty great thing.
In a way, this was a blessing in disguise because it's made me do. I mean, I had two meetings today with two small businesses, and so that's revenue just by having a meeting.
I have to say, I hear this all the time from entrepreneurs who faced major challenges. Fixing the problem was hard, yes, and nobody wants that kind of stress. But ultimately, a big problem forces entrepreneurs to make improvements they may not have made otherwise. It creates solutions that are better for the long run. Without problems, I mean, this sounds so simple as to be stupid, but let me just say it. Without problems, we wouldn't have solutions. And solutions is what entrepreneurs live for. And that's our episode. If you like this show, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Problem Solvers. We come out every Monday morning, and I know you don't want to miss one. And go ahead, share it with a friend who needs a problem solved. I guarantee they will thank you. Also, I love hearing from listeners, so reach out. You can find me on Twitter or Instagram at HeyPfeiffer, HeyPfeiffer. And you can visit my website, jasonpfeiffer.com, where you can also sign up for my monthly newsletter of entrepreneurial insights, or just reach out to tell me how you solved a problem. Problem Solvers was edited by Conrad Martin, and it all comes together thanks to Deepa Shah. My name is Jason Pfeiffer, editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine, and we'll see you next week with another problem solved.